The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
We would like to thank the sponsor of our show, Rockwool. Rockwool helps improve your quality of life. From thermal comfort, regardless of the climate zone, to quiet spaces for privacy and well-being, to peace of mind, knowing that the home is built with the goal of fire safety.
We use Rockwell in our jobs, and insulation helps drive all of those goals. Material selection is just as important as assembly design for both exterior and interior applications.
Stone wool insulation solutions from Rockwell are a good investment because they are long-lasting, durable, and resilient. They will continue to perform for generations, at least 65 years and probably longer.
Safe and sound for interior walls, floors, and ceilings, and comfort board and comfort bat for exterior applications, Rockwool is the product for you. Thank you again to Rockwool for being a sponsor for this episode. Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Welcome to Salem, Massachusetts. Kid in a candy store for Brent and Richard. Myself as well. This is like the coolest city in America that I've been to offhand, I think. That's a broad sweeping statement, but it's really cool. So we are in a place in Salem called the McIntyre District. Just to give a little background history on Salem, this was the wealthiest city in America at one time because it's a major shipping port. This is like very close to the ocean, has a bunch of houses on the ocean. We're on sort of the inland part of it, and we're on the McIntyre District where a lot of these houses were
named after Samuel McIntyre, who was a master builder here and who did that building right there. He's one of my building heroes. Like when we do the master, apprentice, and journeyman thing,
yep.
Samuel McIntyre, William Buckland, they're the model for master builder, what they knew, what's going on. So, yeah.
Anyway, welcome. We're going to look around.
So we're going to just walk up this street, okay? We're going to see Greek Revival. We're going to see Federal. We're going to see Georgian, okay? And we're going to be looking at the differences. In fact, you know, this is a great Federal entrance here. And look, I get asked by our clients, saying, hey, build us a front entry. And so when I quote a front entry, I'm oftentimes looking at something like this going, okay, well, if we do the little turned columns on the with the fluting and we do the thing, we do the leaded glass, if you want this door and this opening, it's a $30,000 opening. People are like, I don't want to pay $30,000. Well, that's what I'm quoting, okay? And so this is where looking to the past and figuring out how things should look and what's thing. I mean, they've got a drip edge in there. They've got amazing leaded glass with the little stars and emblems on the leaded glass.
Yeah, what's the deal with those?
Well, they're a decorative thing. They would have been made in lead. They would have been poured into a mold. They would have been carved, right? And so they end up being these decorative little add-on. There's some of them missing in this thing. There's wavy glass in there. There's dentils in there. I mean, there's engaged pilasters. Anyway, it's a complex opening. It's not just door sidelight.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of great details in there. And if you want a beautiful entry, sometimes you have to pay more.
So selfish question here, because we're doing a, we're restoring a house that's down in Rockland, Massachusetts right now. We're working on it. It had this really cool theming behind all of it where it, you know, they had all the details replicated throughout different things. So Ryan and I are working on the column. You know, we've got these details that we're seeing in the column, this dogwood flower, and that dogwood flower is repeated in the leaded glass. First, I thought this was the same flower. It's actually totally a different one. But is that a common thing, like
so
seeing that throughout the house?
You can see in historic catalogs, flyers that would have come out from companies that made these, they would have had decorative details that were common. Dogwood flower, whatever thing is, a daisy or whatever the thing is. So yes, there were common elements that would have been copied over and over again. I don't know exactly what this one is.
Would that have necessarily been like a sign of a craftsman? Like, oh, this is my signature thing that I do? Or is it just they exist,
well, like,
you have a mold?
Yeah. I don't know, maybe sometimes, not always. And you're going from a period of handcrafting to industrialization. By the time 1860, 1870, it's all mass produced. Right, because it's industrialized. You go back before that time, you'll get more handcrafted, unique things that could have regional,
like a signature.
Yeah, and that was really popular in Salem. That was popular in Boston. It's just like with furniture, you have the ball and claw foot. that would be the, you know, New York Ball and Claw and the Philadelphia Ball and Claw and the Boston Ball and Claw. They were all different. The regionalism that happens, and that happens in a handcrafted era, not in an industrialized era.
So that stops right around the 1830s?
Stops with, yeah, 1850, after Civil War especially, but probably 1840, 1850.
All right, this is a dumb question, and I'll take the L for not knowing it. When did the Civil War end?
Good question. When did the Civil War end?
I don't know, because a lot of people reference that
wait,
made
wait,
an
wait,
important
wait,
time.
Wait, pause. When did the Civil War end?
Yeah.
Wow. You know? You know?
1867?
1865.
Okay.
So, but you're his filmer, you know all this.
Yeah, you're not fair.
You guys, so here's the other fun thing. And this is a funky thing because that five panel raised panel door is not a federal door, and we're gonna see better federal doors. And there's also detail in this thing with 2/2 windows. This thing's throwing me off. I'm not sure what's going on. It's been jacked around a bunch. But we're gonna see, as we go along in here, Georgian, Greek Revival, and Federal. And this is what, one reason why I love this street is because we see all of them. But like, that's a transition. I would say that that's a transitional house, okay? Because the headers over top of the window are Federal, but that doorway and that entry is totally Georgian, okay? Now, why do I say that?
It's heavy. Well,
it's heavy, right? Those columns are huge, right? Remember those columns on those other houses we were looking at? That Corinthian columns, they're about, you know, 6 or 8 inches. That one's, you know, 10 or 12. These are big. Now, the problem with this is Victorian, because that whole column thing is called the Tower of the Winds.
This is 1805.
This is Victorian?
This house is 1805.
Entry, oh, the entry, okay.
That entry. Thank you. That's good. But that entry is a much later entry. That's not a federal entry. That's a Victorian add-on, right? And so the scale, right? The scale of that's not federal, right? None of the details are. So again, we're seeing all these funky looking different things, but the most typical entry is like this federal door here with the fan light, right? When you see the leaded glass, when you see the fan light, and you'll see some of these doors have like a three-part door size. Look at the small columns. Look at the entablature, how it shrinks, right? Are you getting in? I'm trying to explain because you're always asking. And I'm like, right? These are all really subtle things. And we're seeing, it's hard too, because we're seeing things like they added that door later.
Yeah.
And then you're seeing a mix of Victorian, Federal, Georgian, all these different things happening. Now, because Salem really blew up after and during the American Revolution, so what is that, 1780, 1776, 1781 it ends, right? That block on the things, Salem's really growing. So so it's not necessarily we're gonna see a lot of Georgian houses, but we're seeing a mix of all these things because the Americans are interpreting this stuff. We walked right past that door. But the Americans are interpreting things. But just the scale of these openings are all changing and are all moving. And there's almost never this perfect federal, this is the federal house, because they're all influenced by different things.
Right.
If they're influenced by things from England, if they're influenced by, they might be more sophisticated or less sophisticated. So you're gonna see all this different stuff. All right, we're gonna do this, but we gotta critique this work here.
We cross the street.
Yeah. Is that poplar? That's not gonna last.
That's pine, isn't it?
Yeah, that's pine.
Yeah, this is pine for sure.
That
yeah.
does not look like eastern white pine.
It is, it's just very not tight grown.
When did you do this, Jackson?
This looks like a piece of this looks like a piece of fur. I just wonder how long this is gonna last. They got a split in that thing already, the way they put that around there.
Well, and it's sapwood here.
I just don't know if that's going to last very well. Oh, look at this, is an old 2x4. So sorry,
this has been around.
One of the things,
well, and this is pre,
you know, pro tip, you want to prime all sides of everything before you put anything in, and it looks like nothing's been primed.
No, it's just pre-primed wood. It's like the super cheap pre-prime layer.
That's PVC.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Why are we looking at this when we have all of this? Let's get out of here.
Well, I'm looking at a repair on a great historic house, and I'm like, uh-oh.
You just took me back to Texas.
Ruh-roh. Okay, so I was just explaining on my Instagram story how these things change and these things that are confusing. But look how dainty and light this ironwork is. Look how soft and tight these are. Look at the door. It has no raised panels. Remember, we were just looking at that other door. That raised panels. I go, this is kind of confusing. I don't know whether that kind of breakout in the glass was something that was cheaper than leaded glass. I'd be curious to know at the time. But, I mean, there's a fantastic federal house with a federal entry. Look how small the architrave is.
Mm-hmm.
Just that little thin thing. But, that, I mean, a beautiful surround there.
It has a gutte, right, with no triglyph, or is that something else?
That's exactly what that is.
The gutte is the little, like, motif under the triglyph.
Yeah,
they're like little gutter-looking things.
Thought to tie in the pieces together. So you'd have a triglyph coming in, G-U-T-T-A-E.
Cool. And they're the little circles that you can see when you're looking up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No. That's the bottom of a mutual that you're seeing
there.
Oh,
okay.
Okay.
I thought those were also gutte.
I thought that was the bottom of gutte.
I don't think so.
Well, we can go look.
Yeah, someone might know. Here's another Greek Revival one here, right? So you're seeing this town kind of evolve and happen. But I mean, the other thing I would say is, like, if you're looking for inspiration for how to do a fan light over your window, right?
Look no further.
Right. Just like, this is why you look to the past, because these details are so awesome.
The landscape,
this is a
too.
Really cool one coming up.
I love this Greek Revival across the street with the Greek Doric columns that go down with a no base, and just how low that pitch is on that pediment.
Yeah, that's
can you
very
talk about that?
Scaled
like
down.
The different sizing and shapes and lift of pediments, because
The Greeks, the ideal for the Greek was like either 12 and a half or 22 and a half. I can't remember. I have to look back, but it's low.
22.
The 22 or is it
12? Well, I thought the ideal pediment was 22 and a half because it was 45 cut in half.
So the Greek would look at the Parthenon and you look at it, you look at the pitch and how those things were put together, and that became the ideal. And so there was a Roman Doric, right? And it has a base that it sits on. The Greek Doric actually has no base, and I think it just looks handsome. I think it could be very modern. I think that's something that could fit on a very modern house if you wanted. And so anyway,
would you keep the fluting?
I would.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I think it's stronger without it. It's maybe more modern without
That's
it.
That's what I was thinking, modern.
Beautiful doorway. Look at the between the skylight and the door, that column there.
Like you're talking about how the pilasters have the same play, just in different proportions from one to the other?
Yeah. And just how again,
even
I
up.
Keep saying how light it is,
the
but.
The theme keeps going.
I guess I'm sitting there going, do you guys see that? I'm saying these words, but I don't know if it's like, If you're looking at it going, yeah,
I'm going, sir, this is a Wendy's. No, I'm picking it up. Yeah.
And here's the deal. And you're practicing your eye, right? Your eye is kind of learning how to see this and go, oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. I can kind of see that. And then you're going to see it again. You're going to go, oh, that's what he was talking about. But this is where you're training your eye. And it's practicing seeing these elements and these details. It is not something that happens overnight. That's just everybody gets, and you're an idiot if you can't see it.
Well,
that
one
is
of the things,
feels, just to be clear.
Yeah, when you're first starting out, you're like, you just like how you started on the first podcast.
Oh,
it was like, yeah, you know, just kind of.
Everyone says, oh yeah, the soffit. Everyone, you know, and you're like,
yeah,
I've never even heard of that word before. And then when you're in it, you're like, you've got to deal with the soffit all the time. You deal with fish, you deal with, you know, all these words that you, gutte, new one today.
Yeah,
right.
But one of the things about this walk that's crazy is, like, it doesn't matter where you look on this street, your, like, senses are, like, overloaded with architectural detail.
Yeah.
And
so I'm curious on this house, if you look at that, you know, whatever that window is over top, that crazy Palladian window, that was the same detail that was on that other house.
Yeah.
And whether they found that detail and they copied it because everybody saw it and was so impressed by it. I've seen it in a few places. It's here.
Is that the gouge thing? Like the, where it's cut out in the arch? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
It's like, it looks like a giant gouge cut.
It does. It's almost fluted the way it's done.
But it looks like feathers.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Like how they're like laid over each other, like a plumage.
And it's interesting to me too, the Greek key that's happening over top on these lintels, these stone lintels over the windows, whether that's, if it's getting late enough, I don't know when this building was built, but if it's getting late enough that you'd have an early Greek influence. Remember, Stuart and Revit go to study the Greek buildings in the late 1700s, 1760, 1780. So it's not it wouldn't be impossible for them to have a Greek key influence early in the federal period. But anyway, we'll just...
So the other thing is kind of fun here, like those two columns were completely different. The one on that house, the one on this house, but they had the same interplay between the different stories where you've got, you know, the columns playing against the pilasters, playing against the pilasters up top, all at different proportions, all at different scales, all Corinthian, all equally carved to the nines. You gotta think that's some of McIntyre really pushing the other builders in the area to their limits. And
You gotta wonder what was going on. Is that a sign of wealth? Is that just that Salem had a bunch of wealth and that's what you do when you have money?
Well, my immediate mind goes to, oh, there must have been a bunch of molds. There must have been a bunch, you know, that different people were using. But I don't know if you have a mold for a big one, a small one, that had to be carved, you know?
Well, probably in 1805, there wasn't a mold.
Right.
Unless it was a plaster mold.
Yeah, like a compo, that was called?
Well, compo is really for interior wood stuff. But I mean, plaster or some kind of cementitious thing.
Anyway.
Yeah, I feel like what you said though about McIntyre kind of raising inspiring people. Like, this is where you would have to be on your game here, you know, if you're a builder. You're gonna make a fool out of yourself if you don't know what you're doing.
And you know, you see these, the columns, those are the with the fence posts and everything, those are the same things we saw. That's why I was like,
Federal. Yeah.
Right? And then you're right, it was a Georgian house. And yet, you know, did they see this and go, oh, I need to upgrade my house? Because remember, if your house is built in 1760, and here it is, 1810. Your house is 50 years old. You're wanting to update your house. You're wanting to look, you know, like you got it going on. And, you know, if this house comes along, it's a very wealthy house. Well, we're going to have that same kind of detail. Because that is a very similar detail.
That's a cool house right there,
should cross the street.
So the deal is that's a Victorian house, copying the federal stuff.
Okay.
And so that is not a...
Wait. What makes you say it?
Because I know it, because I researched it. I looked at all the details before. I've been here 5 or 6 times. So if I looked at all the details and goes, who built that house?
Yeah.
And then I looked it up and it's like 1870 or something. And so how they were able to copy those details.
Yeah. It's crazy when they have the pilaster go from like floor to roof, you know?
Yeah. Or,
like you see that. You don't see it often, but you see it some of the times. Like that one where you built that tavern, that house has... something like that.
Yeah, that's true.
That chimney has the corbelling going on as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering too whether that was a two-story house that they added a third story to.
Oh, that's a thought.
Graduated fenestration, right?
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not like a solid rule, but I thought it was like bigger, medium, smaller. But I'm seeing here like big, small.
Yeah, and it's not... like you see it, but it's not something that would, like on that house right there, the only difference between the first and second floor windows is the trim over top of the windows.
Mm.
And so they've exaggerated the look on the just by the way they've treated that. And so I think it works. And the reason they did it is because it's stronger at the base as it lifts up.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a trick that worked. But it didn't. You didn't have to have big windows on the bottom. You didn't have to, but anyway. 1821, the Phillips House Museum. This is a really special house. I've walked by this a number of times. Always been blown away by the fence posts with the finials and the urns. I can't imagine doing that for a client today. Now, there's a couple of books I highlighted in a story or a post. I can't remember what. There were a guy named Peter Harrison did these books on brickwork and on fences, okay? And so he basically has chronicled these historic fences and details, some of them like this. The fence building industry needs to know that they could raise their game a little bit and that there is opportunity to build and do some pretty crazy stuff.
So one of the fun details that we talked about is the skived clapboards that you see here.
Mm.
This house has them as well. And then it has the rusticated coining on the side of the house, which is really cool because, you know, they're obviously imitating stone, but They weren't quite rich enough at that threshold to have full stone.
So many historic houses did that.
Yeah.
I mean, Mount Vernon did it.
Totally. I guess I'm just saying.
No. It's a great point. I love the window headers, okay? So basically you've got the architrave that goes around the window, right? Supports the opening. You've got a fluted frieze, okay? So that's what that banding in the frieze goes. And then you got a really unusual cornice, okay? With that Gothic, you know, bed mold, dental looking thing. You've got a mutual basically that comes out in that soffit. I mean, that is a really complicated
for every window, except the tops.
And it's all made by hand, right? And so
well, and at the tops they've got the large version,
yeah,
right, which is the actual
yeah, true. The entablature over top here, you again see that gutte without the triglyphs coming out.
Okay? That's so like peculiar to me.
You know, it's kind of a cool way to do it because it's not as heavy. If you brought the triglyphs out and you can see some of them, it looks like a more strong entablature. It weakens it, but it still plays with the classical order. And then you got the mutuals with the, you guys were thinking that those are gutte too.
I'm sitting there going,
maybe it is. I can't remember. There's a classicist watching who will actually know what that term is. But anyway, it could be.
It does look like it,
yeah. Notice on almost every house we've seen, all these great porches, okay, they all have a pilaster or a three-quarter column engaged in the wall against the house. That's something that people don't do anymore. They just put the columns out front. But look how it ties it back to the house and it strengthens it visually. To have that pilaster supporting that beam as it runs back to the house. I think it's a real important detail that makes it look better.
Yeah, when you see it without it, it looks like it's unsupported.
Yeah, yeah, it looks weak. It looks like chicken legs, right? Yeah.
So
but one of the fun details Ryan was talking about was these little flowers that we've got here are like a sign for wealth that they would do. It was like a Chinese sign of wealth symbol. So you actually see that flower design on a lot of these houses.
Well, and in this federal period, you start to see that corner block, okay,
yeah,
that becomes really popular in the Victorian period. You'll also see it in the Greek Revival period. This house is 1821, so it's kind of transitioning towards that Greek Revival. The first Greek Revival building is the Second Bank of Philadelphia. I think it's also 1820. So there could be some Greek influence going on here too.
You ever see that rosette thing in the frieze, like, often?
Yeah, it's called a rondelle.
A rondelle?
Uh-huh. It's just a kind of a round panel. But yes, it's you see it in classical architecture.
I almost feel like it could have gone, like, above each gutte, you know? Like
I kind of like it on the corners, kind of defining the corners.
Yeah.
We're going to be working on a couple of rondelles for the John Hancock door. And so, like, the front facade and everything of the John Hancock house, and he has a couple of rondelles, and I want to say there's more than one kind of spanning his gap, but that
it's interesting to me that the light in 1821 was something that looks like it came from Home Depot.
Yeah, I have that same light.
Isn't that interesting?
That's original. Yeah.
Yeah, so Home Depot really has some historic precedent.
No, they really do. They knew what they were doing. Yeah.
I looked at this door and I said, oh, look, there's a Greek Revival door. And it because of two long panels. That hardware is Colonial Revival. That's not Greek Revival. And so then I'm sitting there going, but look at the fan light, okay? And the fan light and even the entablature isn't necessarily strongly federal. But then I looked at the windows and I go triple hung windows. And I was like, look how tall they are.
Triple hung windows being?
Georgian?
Being Greek Revival.
Greek Revival, sorry.
So you're jumping pages. I'm just making sure you're defining what
Well, and then I saw the plaque, 1845. So this is a Greek Revival house, but and then you look at the fan light and the surround, you're going, well, that's not Greek Revival. And so there is something that's clearly not Greek Revival except for the door, and then but you know it was built at that time. So again, I was saying earlier how you kind of got to train your eye and figure things out, and you're picking little parts and pieces to go, well, that doesn't make sense. And so it's hard.
That really large entablature there is Greek Revival, right?
Yeah, no, it's a heavier entablature for sure.
If you had to pick one, what would you say, Greek Revival?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that
What's the cheat code for that? Just Colonial? If you don't know.
It's just like you could say Colonial Revival.
Yeah, Colonial Revival.
And so what happens in the Colonial Revival period, especially in the you know, late 1800s and early 1900s is you see a mix of Georgian, Federal, and Greek Revival all happening together. And so you can say that's colonial revival because it is.
Yeah, it's like right? the answer to give when you don't know. Colonial right. revival.
It's like Victorian. You've got the large, broad safety net of Victorian for yeah. anything past 1840s, 50s.
So this is 1858. And so
really cool rustication.
And now ooh, you've got yeah. the columns going to piers, right? And so these are square columns called piers. They're chamfered edged things. You've got that kind of oriel bay window going on there, the arch lights, and so clearly the brackets, right? Now you're looking at a Victorian house, but you know, it's hard to see. What are you looking at?
Maybe a little Italianate? I'm seeing dual brackets and I'm seeing curved windows on the second
1858,
floor.
Sure. I mean, there's no arch windows except in the top piece.
Which is where our instructor told us they would be.
Jackson, what I want you to do is not
ignore everything you're
exactly,
to say.
Exactly. Yeah. So then you'll be right. I love this porch with the double hung windows on an open porch.
I love the cool? mansard roof here. It's hard to see this close up, but there's a really pretty mansard roof on this house.
And then this last house here, I'm pretty sure, as I remember, is Georgian, is an older house, I think. But I remember this entry and this, yeah, there's 1870. So, yeah, I mean, if you just walk down the street and just study these buildings, I mean, you're going to learn a lot about how these things are put together and be able to study a bunch of different styles.
Look at the rustication on this house. Look how new that looks.
That looks fresh.
It looks really fresh. That's really nice.
That's actually not even that hard to do. Like, you just bevel the corners. Like,
yeah, but if you're technically, like, traditionally doing it, you would get a sand mixture with your paint, and you would hit the side of your board with it to where it falls through that and kind of sand sticks to it.
I would just sprout it.
Look.
So no. It's cool. I just, look at this, 1909.
Yeah, 1870, 1909. These last two were.
You know what's interesting about that? That, like, detail above the jack, is that called a jack arch? The where uh-huh. the bricks do that?
Yeah, the brick arch.
Is that supposed to be like a crown or something?
Well,
or?
It's a belt course. This is like a really well done colonial revival house. Speaking of colonial revival, all right, 1909. Look at that Georgian entry, big, heavy, strong. You see the triglyphs, you see the gutte, the brick jack arches, the belt course right there. Like Drayton Hall has that kind of belt course that kind of sticks out. I think it's kind of a drip edge kind
okay.
of piece. So, I mean, look at the coursing of the brick. I mean, you've got this Flemish bond and
it is pretty thick though.
Yeah, and you've got a molded brick course. So this is all 1909.
So just
right?
to define terms, the Flemish bond is where there's not a tying course on the brick. It actually is tied along the whole course of the building, right?
Flemish bond is where you've got an alternating header and runner.
Right.
And so they're locking it together. Is that what you're saying?
It's thick,
I'm
right?
saying there's not.
It's like as thick as the brick? Or as like the wall is as wide as the brick is long? Because it's going like this and then like this?
It may be more than that. It may be deeper backset than that.
Okay.
Typically on a solid masonry wall, it's three widths. Okay?
Three wide is what it's called. I'm serious. Back me up.
So you end up with, right? So this bonding of this header brick, okay? Would go in,
yeah, in right
to the first wall, okay, or to the middle wall, and then the other side would be tying it together, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this is a solid masonry.
Is it like
wall.
Jenga?
That's why.
Well, traditional masonry walls will have like the regular orientation of the brick, and then every couple of courses they'll have like a tying course that goes into the next one, right?
Well, the English bond is that way.
Yeah.
The English bond is all these runners, right. And then you'll have a whole thing of headers. The Flemish bond is you alternate the bricks,
yeah.
bonding it together. Which,
that's one of the, we'll see the English style done on King's Chapel and done on the Old North Church. But so this Flemish bond, it doesn't have a tying course. It's tied along the way.
There's so many impressive things they've done here. I mean, look at the brick dental at the top.
I think this is my favorite house I've seen so far.
Like, I mean, the scale
which is
of
saying
it is
a lot.
Wonderful. I mean, it's this is a special house.
Look how pitched that stool is.
So, you know,
that's a really steep pitch right there.
You know what's funny, Richard? You came all the way to Massachusetts to see some of the oldest houses in America,
and
you like the 1909?
I don't know. I just have a bias, I guess. I need to see more.
Oh, look at that.
So this is why I call it
that door looks way
Georgian
older.
Thing. Look at the raised panels, right?
Whoa,
the bullseye glass.
That glass?
Yeah,
is that's what it's
glass.
Called?
Yeah.
because that's where they took the pentel, wherever they blow the blown glass and then cut it and spin it. That's where the thing is stuck to. That's where they're blowing the glass.
And that's like, they want that. Like that's
no, that was a waste piece.
It was a waste piece. Oh. But in this reproduction of this door, it's a desired piece because that's how they would have done it back in the day. Because
funny how that works.
In, yeah.
But the rustication around that, the column sitting on top of, very classical. The weight of this thing is reading is very Georgian.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I really love this house too.
Very thick, very heavy.
Yeah. Yeah, those columns are fat.
Yeah. I do like, this is something that I've seen a lot. I don't really know what it is, but they've got like the pointed tops and then the rounded tops.
Oh, that's like the White House does that, right?
Yeah.
With the windows.
What is with that? That's a Colonial Revival thing.
Well, they did it. No, it's not a Colonial Revival thing. It's a classical thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, and what they would do is when you have those big buildings and there is, you know, 20 windows across the thing,
yeah,
it would get monotonous and it would break up that monotony to have the alternating type of
pediment
across there.
Do you want to keep going?
Yeah, I'm
look
kinda,
at these.
I'm
there's just a ton of houses here. Let's just keep looking.
1882.
So 1882, right? This is almost like a Carpenter Gothic or some kind of Swiss chalet.
Do you say that because of the little like fake covers with the little?
Well, it's all wood, and you know you have a Second Empire roof, but all that scrolling and all that stuff in there.
Yeah, what's that called? What's it called when it's on like a fascia board?
Oh, barge board?
Barge board, that's what it's called.
So it's just highly decorative, kind of a crazy, you know, this is a house we don't see in Texas because in 1882, we're still a frontier, but in, you know, in Boston or in Salem, we're looking at something that's just
more civilized.
Yeah, and it's great. I mean, I love it.
So this is kind of like the McFarland House, in a way. Like, that's probably the closest thing we've got to something like this, right?
So, 1882, McFarland's 1895.
I feel like that it's side Queen circle Anne. Element is...
So, the Queen Anne thing is you get the turret, and that's really part of that Queen Anne look. But yeah, I mean, this is just so different from the everything. Even the way they banded it, and they've got the siding, kind of that kind of shiplap siding, and then you got these bands with the horizontal.
Almost like a wainscot on the outside of a house.
It's interesting, mm-hmm. right? And it is at the pedestal height, and so it is kind of a grounding piece. So
very organized for what
I
it
like
is
it.
Too.
It kind of repeats itself too.
Yeah.
And look at that; they've got them going diagonal
on
the top.
Going diagonal in the eave, which would be your entablature, right? So, anyway, they're still playing around. They did the same thing here, where your bracketed entablature are going around that house.
Are you saying on that one?
Yeah. And so you're still. You know, have classical elements told in a very ornamented way. But I think we're going to see just a bunch of Victorians as we go down here. And, you know, look at this.
It's interesting that
you got 4-inch siding, you got rusticated corning, and you got rustication on the front, all in wood.
Yeah, wow.
Right? You got a lot of details.
Dang, look at that granite base or whatever that is.
Yeah. So, you know what's a detail that's really hard for us to do today? Is when we build a wall, okay?
By you mean like at whole or just in general?
At whole and in general, okay?
Good question.
If you wanted to do this detail today, okay? Realize that the only way to do it is you've got your framed wall going all the way up, okay? Then you're putting your stone out on the face of it. And so if you're going to put siding onto to try to even it out, you have to build your wall out so you can get to that point. Or like what they did here, they've got that stone, I suspect, is this big.
Yeah.
Building their wall right on top of it, they're able to kick their face of the siding right out to the face of the stone. That's a hard detail for us to build today because we don't build solid masonry anymore. With our framing methods and everything's a veneer, it's hard to get that. We're about to do that on a house. And I was saying, if we're doing that, we've got to kick it out because I need it to look like this.
You
I
want the little step back.
On a step back. And one of our projects, the ranch project, we had to create this big sill, which isn't historic.
On the stone?
Because our wall was log cabin. So I couldn't fake the log cabin to kick it out over top of it. Unless we had a solid masonry thing on top of
the
it.
Other ranch.
Yes. So
yes.
We would have had to change the way we build that thing.
Ah.
in order to get it right.
Huh.
So there's a detail that you see historically that's hard to copy today.
So is that just because of a lack of planning or a lack of money to get the granite, or what's the
big planning
problem?
It's planning, because what you have to do is you have to build your foundation beam wall, then you have to build your solid masonry piece that fits onto it, then you have to get the engineers to sign off, and you lock in your wood framed wall back down into the foundation. How do you tie them all together, right?
And so they want them all tied together.
They want them all tied together. You can't let it kind of flip around. So it's planning and practice and like, okay, how are we going to make this detail work?
Is that because there used to be a master builder and now there's not anymore, or there's too many cooks in the kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, this is an example of the lost art of building, right? This is an example of that we don't know how to do that anymore. And you have to reinvent it. Like, that's what we're doing. We're reinventing how we were gonna build it so that it matches that.
Feels like you're jumping through more hoops than anything.
Well, this is one of those ones where you say you fight for stuff, because that's where people are gonna be like, well, you don't need that little step, but you're like,
100%.
I have to have this 100%. Step back.
That's exactly right. And so then you have to get your client to buy in.
Yeah.
Say, hey, this is a really important detail that we get right if you want this, right? A lot of times we get great clients, and so they're like, yeah, let's go for that. I'd like to get that detail. If you don't have a client that's going to help you fight, then it can be a losing battle.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it's super expensive, but it is planning, it is engineering. Maybe that detail to get it built right is an extra 20 grand,
you know,
30 grand. Is that worth it?
You know, yeah, because you're going to have this band that's like structurally supporting everything.
Right. Cool. It's communicating.
I would never even have thought of that if you never said this.
Yeah. I don't think we do this enough, where you got a brick wall and then tie it into wood. In the South, that end wall that's brick and then the siding, I think it's a great detail.
Almost looks like a coining from the front, right?
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not alternating like the coining, but.
No, yeah, it's very similar. But basically you've got, you know, this masonry pedimented end that's going up, and then your timber framing inside there kind of locking it together. And so.
All right, I finally found a plank frame window. These are plank framed.
Yeah, that's sitting out far enough, right?
Maybe some of those on the last street that we're looking at. Basically the whole window, like, this is like would be today the casing of the window.
Right.
But this is a part of the window unit. And so it's built made as a whole, lifted up and put into place, and then they take these drives and they're nails and nail them into the structure. That's the peg.
But
the tenon. They have a nail that is essentially driving straight through the entire thing into the frame
because
of the building.
Because your wall is a plank.
Yeah, so you can see it way better from the inside. Yeah,
so
you're right.
Your wall is a plank. Okay.
Just boards stacked
board
up.
Stacked
and then
up.
You're
so
okay.
You don't have anything to nail to, and so you're attaching it to the outside face of the wall.
And so
seems
when
easy.
You look at it, the install's gotta be way easier. But they're using these like big cast wrought nails, and essentially it's like a secured in two places by like nothing. And so when you look at it from the interior, you're like,
I love about it, we did this at
I want
the,
to see it at, from the interior.
At that Pennsylvania farmhouse, is the windows stick out from the wall.
Yeah.
You know, what is that, two or three inches. And it has this depth and this strength that is really sexy.
Yeah so you will either the window sticking out like that or sunken in, because you talked about flat windows. So that's interesting.
Yeah. You're getting a lot of shadow lines with that look.
I like them more protruding from the shadow line angle, but also from the water displacement angle, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's easier to shed water off of a building as a whole, especially a brick building.
Say that again?
It's easier to shed water off of a building as a whole, especially a brick building, if you've got a lot of exposures that are pushed out.
I'd have to think about that. This is a neoclassical house, right? You've got the swags. It's a Victorian house, but it's told in a federal language because you've got that decoration, the swags and the urns, which are part of that federal story. The way these bays are and the divided lights and the windows.
Look how awesome these windows are.
Yeah.
They're curved windows.
I thought neoclassical was like, I mean, I guess it could be whatever, but like when the columns go from the floor to the roof and there's like a porch. It doesn't have to be that?
Doesn't have to be that. And when I said neoclassical, not like that, but it's clearly with the columns and the strength and the entablature and everything else, you know.
Oh, because these are.
Yeah.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, inspired and you know, the way they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Neoclassicism was like the rediscovery of Rome, right? And the.
Yeah, it's a confusing term. Basically, you've got neoclassical that happens because Robert Adam goes to Pompeii, sees the decoration, and decides that we've been doing decoration wrong. We go from the heavy Georgian to the neoclassical, that in that federal Adam-esque style in America. Okay, that's neoclassical. Period. Okay, then you go through all the Victorian stuff and crazy whatever crazy looking things going on. McKean, Mead, and White come along. And they are, you have Trinity Church, which is done in the kind of a medieval form, okay? And then you cross the street from the Trinity Church is the Boston Library.
Yeah.
Which is a classical building. And that's that neoclassicism I'm talking about, a reemergence of classical inspiration, classical design. You know, at MIT and at Columbia, they basically, those campuses are a recreation of the Parthenon, our Pantheon, a recreation of all these classical buildings from antiquity. So that too is neoclassical because it too is looking back. So that's why it's like, yeah. Right?
There's not like a defined era.
So that's like another colonial revival. You could say, oh, that's neoclassical.
100%.
Because anything in the U.S. is technically neoclassical because it wasn't, you
that's
know.
Your there, that's your safety.
There are specific periods that it's more common, right?
Yeah.
Like because.
Greek revival.
Right? You have Greek revival and you have Gothic revival. I mean, that's not neoclassical. That's Gothic, right? And so there are periods of time when they're in the Romantic period and everything else, where it's very storybook and it's not classical. So when McKean, Mead, and White and those firms start doing really classical things, New York Public Library, it too is a reinterpretation of the classical. Neoclassical.
Mm-hmm. New classical. Neo means new, right?
Like today, if someone did a classical house and bastardized it, I wouldn't call that neoclassical.
Yeah.
Even though they're trying to be classical.
It's the execution.
Yeah.
So.
And I think there has to be a movement of enough things going on that you can say, yeah, that's a neoclassical era.
Well, I think also, like, just like side note, the way we're walking through this, like, glorious architectural heaven here, we should do this back in Texas, like through a McMansion neighborhood and just like, just trash it. No, not trash it, but actually critique it and like say like, that's why this is wrong.
I think that's funny, but I also think it would be
too hard to fix. It'd be like your commercial.
It'd be really hard. And so, but we ought to try it.
Remember the Anderson commercial that you critiqued? Where you're like, I can't do anything about this house. It's just eight gable ends.
Oh, the house that's unfixable.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you like an aneurysm if we take you.
The other thing I wanted to point out really quick here, you've always been the shutter guy in my mind. That was always the big thing that you pointed out. Yeah.
Where I'm just, you can and see it now.
Yeah. Whenever you say to people like, what do you mean by preservation carpentry? That's usually the easiest way you can be like, okay, shutters. They're
so
wrong
true.
Today. Like that's the quickest way you can just get them to go, this is what I mean by that. So I've always been confused because I'm like, how did we even get to the stage where you've got the tiny little windows being architecturally correct? This is an example of that. Those are articulating windows. So they're bifold windows. So they're folded up right now, but they're really tiny, but they will actually span across the whole window when they
the
unfold.
Shutters
the
are
shutters
bifold.
Themselves will okay. unfold to then cover that window. And that's where we get the precedent of those little tiny ones. Because I'm always like, I've always been confused by them. Like where?
I see what you're saying.
You know, to just take this shutter that's like this and then make it like this.
Because those look wrong right now.
Because those look wrong right
but
now.
If you
but
fold
they're
them.
Actually right whenever they bifold. But someone probably did work to. I can't tell with those windows.
I can't tell either.
It looks like they're not. They were curved originally and they're not curved now. But
they're supposed to be curved like this.
You know what's crazy? That's a gutter right there.
Yeah,
I
love
just
those
realized
gutters.
That.
Yeah. Chain gutters, rain gutters. Yeah, speaking of Gothic revival, right, you see this little parish house here.
Yeah.
Great stuff. I mean, one of my favorite towns coming in here. I mean, right, you see everything.
Victorian. It is funny. I think every shot that we have so far, everyone's kind of doing this.
Yeah, we're just, our head is on a swivel.
Yeah. it's fun, you know, you guys never being here, you being here a couple times, you being here.
Yeah,
you know,
never been in New England.
This is fun. So thanks for watching this episode. We got a lot more coming. We're going to go to the Old North Church, going to go to King's Chapel, and going to hear from a couple
of great couple days
professors.
Here.
So, yeah, thanks for watching the Passion for Craft podcast, and we'll see you in the next one.